Okay, we're live. We've been live for 5 minutes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, then I'll start the show.
Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Switching cameras here. Sorry. There we go. So, hey, Todd, how's it going?
Oh, I didn't see you come in.
So this weekend we went up to kind of the area that I grew up in, and I thought I'd visit my old house and kind of see what's going on. And so I knocked on the door and said, "Hey, I grew up here. Could I take a look around and check out what's changed and what's different?" And they said, "Go away," and slammed the door in my face. And I'm like, my parents could be so rude sometimes.
That was a long walk for that joke.
Thanks.
See, now I'm back to not knowing what to do since I have no sounder to fall back on, but I'll just plunge on forward and say, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Workoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing really well.
We're really getting wrangling this technology around now. Oh, it's weird because it's a delay on the screen. This is why I can't decide to shut my own Facebook feed and stuff like that. But yes, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. It's good to be back. I wasn't here last week. You and Brian Kidd, the Unipiper,
Brian filled in, did a great
job. Excellent
job.
Absolutely. Yes. As I believe what I overheard was that when he was a little nervous about it, Sarah, his wife, told him, "You don't have to be good. You just have to be better than Todd."
Exactly. Which, don't have to outrun the
you
bear.
Pretty much have to. Yes, exactly. You just pretty much have to show up to conquer that feat. But but it is good to be back. So let's dive into some news here. All right, so I have two Tesla stories. I feel like it's been a while since we've really done any Tesla stories, so I'm gonna play our sounder again.
Time to musk up. Wow, never ceases to amaze me.
So good news for you, Mark. The Tesla is starting on their Model 3 electric cars this month. So it'll make the first ones on Friday. Musk said on Twitter, the company will manufacture about 100 units of the compact sedan in August and more than 1,500 by September. And they're going to try to reach 20,000. Boy, that's quite a leap. 1,500 by September and then 20,000 in December. The slow ramp up is typical procedure because they have to build new factories and learn new assembly tasks and install new equipment and all that. For more than a year, Tesla has targeted the summer of 2017 for the launch of the Model 3, which you are in line for.
Yeah, I've got a reservation in line for the Model 3. I don't know if I can afford the actual car once it's out. But the first batch of cars goes to employees and the people who already have a Tesla car, so a Model S or a Model X, they get priority for the Model 3s.
Okay.
And so it's expected that it's really kind of spring of 2018 before the lowly other people like myself who don't have a Tesla, don't work for Tesla,
right,
that we would have access to the Model 3.
Wow. It's... How much do you know the mile range on that one? It seems less than
it's
the other one.
Like 128 miles or
215 miles.
215
on a battery charge.
Yeah, that's kind of the bare minimum. So all the specs that they're talking about are the 50. How much is it? $35,000 version of the car will have the basic battery, the basic features, and that would be the 215 mile range. And but you can the projection is that they would have all-wheel drive and the longer range, and you might have to wait longer to get those. When we get to
Mars, they'll finally be ready.
Precisely.
So Elon Musk has also started on his first tunnel, and it should be up and running in the next week. So he recently announced, again, probably on Twitter, that his tunnel digging operation, which is called the Boring Company, is done carving out its first segment, but he didn't talk about where it was located. He did leave a bunch of clues, and by the looks of things, it's called the Godot machine. I wonder what that, I mean, I know there's that movie Waiting for Godot, but it's something that I've never seen and only know the reference to.
What's the actress in Wonder Woman?
Oh, Gal Gadot. Oh, that would be great. If he built a Gal Gadot machine that has been digging across America, sprouting up Gal Gadots wherever she goes.
She's just there with a shovel. It's the Godot machine.
So it's been digging right across the street from the SpaceX building in Hawthorne in LA County. So the location makes sense considering the company transported Godot to space. It's spelled differently. I can't always going to hear that. So his Musk's main goal is to dig tunnels under all of Los Angeles that can. Now, that seems like a huge earthquake problem waiting to happen, doesn't it? I mean, or is that somehow or more reinforced if it's on the ground?
Probably. I mean,
seems like that's closer to the earthquake.
Well, not necessarily. So the problem that you have in earthquakes is the liquefaction of the earth and the buildings shaking and doing things. But like the tunnel underneath the San Francisco Bay for the BART tunnel is rated for like... an 11-point earthquake is ridiculously rated, and so it's entirely plausible that the tunnel being built, as long as you don't cross a fault line.
Oh yeah, I see. As long as it runs parallel.
Yeah, you just want to make them flexible so that they would give with the the shaking. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure he knows a little bit more than I do. But it sounds like he's just willy-nilly getting to, like, dig wherever he wants. Like, that's what I don't understand, he's like, this week, I'm not going to tell anyone where I'm digging, but it's going to be open Friday. We're like, oh, yay.
I'm sure that there's permits and things. But the supposition for the tunnel is... a vehicle transport tunnel where there's been different speculations about what that would actually look like. And the model that I saw was a kind of a vehicle carrier that your car gets loaded onto.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the last sentence. We'll definitely know soon enough since the SpaceX chief said that segment's car/pod elevator should be operating next week. When did it? What? Like, I feel like they're just leafing through Elon Musk's his sketchbook, his like rough ideas, and they're like, oh, this one? Okay, well, car pod elevator. Well, I guess a tunnel and a car pod elevator next week.
We got that.
Moving on. This article is entitled "Why NASA Officially Denied It's Running a Child Slave Colony on Mars." Have you heard this story?
I saw the headline, but I don't know.
So after a guess on Yes, the Alex Jones Show on InfoWars claimed that NASA is not only operating colonies on Mars, but populating these colonies with kidnapped child slaves. NASA had to respond to say that no, those colonies did not exist. Quote, "There are no humans on Mars. There are active rovers on Mars. There was a rumor going around last week that there weren't, but there are," said Guy Webster, NASA spokesman. "But there are no humans." So it wasn't actually Alex Jones, completely crazy person who said this. It was one of his guests.
Who's the lady with the goop stuff?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
NASA had to respond to Gwyneth Paltrow this last week as well.
What?
You didn't hear this?
No.
So, So she's been...
What a time to be alive.
It is. So Gwyneth has a product line on her website, Goop. And one of the products is...
Space Air.
Is like tape that is used by NASA to inflict magnetic particles through your body and everything. And so she's claiming all these health claims from this magic tape and these stickers that you put on your skin. And
they're the new magnet bracelet. They're the two copper magnet bracelets.
And so NASA had to put a blog post out in a tweet of like, no. None of that.
Thank you, but no.
Then Gwyneth had like a press conference to clarify what she was selling was
just a pile of garbage.
Yeah. So,
the guest who was Robert David Steele, who was what does it say? He's a former CIA.
David Baylor. Yeah. Finally caught you in your life. Yeah, stickers. Sorry. I was reading.
So we have a live feed.
So you have to not watch the video because it's like 45 seconds behind us. And so it's very confusing.
Oh, there I am still reading.
Right. But the comments are in real time.
Okay.
And so the comments will be commenting on things that happened like 45 seconds ago.
Right. Oh, it's just like we're on the real radio with our 40 second delay.
Exactly.
But this guy, Alex Jones, so he is the former CIA clandestine services case officer who said that we actually believe there is a colony on Mars that is populated by children who were kidnapped and sent into space on a 20-year ride, Steele told Jones on his show, so that once they get to Mars, they have no alternative but to be slaves on the Mars colony.
Oh, my word.
So, Alex Jones... I stumbled onto a best of compilation of his. Well, actually, I didn't stumble. It was the scariest thing because I was making eggs or something from across the room. And I was listening.
You were making eggs
across the room. Because I have a very, very long spatula and I whip the eggs up that way. It's how they get the airiest. But I had my headphones and I was listening to something else. And I was like, why do I hear someone shouting at me? Like I'm overhearing it. And from across the room, my YouTube had just started playing like a best of Alex Jones thing apropos of nothing. And he was screaming about how the government was poisoning the groundwater to turn frogs gay. And he was just screaming about that. And anyway, Alex Jones. Moving on to some sad news. Portland's Mounted Patrol Unit reins it in.
Oh no.
So they did not get their funding, and the Mounted Police Horse Patrol that has been down on
they've been in Southeast a lot.
Yep.
We see them down by the office.
Yeah, so the Portland Police Bureau's Mounted Patrol Unit officially disbanded this past Friday. This must have been a photo caption because it just says children pet mounted patrol horse units in a photo. Sorry, I forgot to erase that part. But the Portland city budget was approved in May, eliminating funding for the unit. The five sworn officers assigned to the MPU will be reassigned to vacant policing positions within in the bureau. In a statement, the police chief Mike Marsham thanked the unit, saying it debuted in the 4th of July parade in 1875. And so they disbanded last for how sad. They wouldn't even let them like make it till July 4th on the anniversary.
Oh,
that's sad. Wah, wah. Oh, I have my slide wheels in here somewhere. It's way over there.
We'll just show the pug for a little while.
We'll show the pug for a little bit. They fought to keep the unit afloat, a group called Friends of the Mounted Patrol, but they ultimately lost the battle due to high cost and lack of space to house the horses because, of course, they are located in the Pearl District. And for a long time, nothing was there. And now probably up until all of the things are there. So I didn't even think about that. But I'm actually kind of surprised because I think we've mentioned this before that I'm surprised in a city that has...
It was the pug.
You're watching the pug again. That in a city that does have so many things that happen on street level with big crowds, that wasn't somehow a justified cost. But I mean, it must not. Maybe bicycle police do the same amount of things there. But speaking of Portland roads, oh, look at that segue. Portland drivers, rank among the worst in the country. So we have landed in the city of the 75 most populated metro areas. What do you think we ranked?
For worst drivers. Worst drivers?
Yes.
Top 10, I'd say 7.
11, close.
Oh, okay.
So the list was provided by Quote Wizard, who is an internet marketing services firm based in Seattle, and they used more than 2 million data points from users and its website to quantify driver standards in each city. The rankings were derived from a weighted sum of accidents, speeding tickets. I'm trying to say that too fast, ironically. DUIs and other citations. So Portland ranks Seattle. Where do you think Seattle landed on this list? Seattle, way worse traffic than Portland, even though I hate Portland traffic. I still think the traffic there is worse.
It feels worse. I would say Seattle drivers are better. Yeah. I'd say 20.
37.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Much better.
So let's see. The first 10 here. So Sacramento is number one. Salt Lake City is number two.
Sacramento is number one worst drivers.
Yes, okay. It's the list of worst drivers. The Sacramento is number one best driver. No, these are the worst drivers. So Sacramento, Salt Lake, then Riverside, California, Richmond, Virginia, and then San Diego, Los Angeles are the top six. And then the other ones are scattered. Portland is number 11, right after Bakersfield and right before Virginia Beach, Virginia. So groundbreaking this year will be the $1.5 billion museum based on who? This is in Los Angeles, right across from the University of Southern California, USC. It will be at the Exhibition Park near USC. $1.5 billion museum.
Based on Michael Jackson.
That is right. George Lucas announced that... No, not Michael Jackson, George Lucas. The home will be opening a museum, which is expected to take 3 years to build, will result in thousands of construction jobs and estimated 1,000 permanent positions. It comes with an endowment of at least $400 million. So the groundbreaking will start later this year. It will be a five-story museum, which was designed by Chinese architect Ma Yongsong, and will span across 7 acres. And well, yes, that was the...
Did you do that with a
pattern? Ma Yongsong, I said. Oh, you heard me.
All right.
And it will span across 7 acres and will be organized into the three sections of the history of narrative art, digital art, and then the art of cinema. What? So it'll be the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, it is calling it.
Okay.
Be,
wasn't he a UCLA?
Yes,
film
he went
student?
To USC Film School. Yeah,
oh,
so
USC,
that is his,
not UCLA.
Yeah, so yeah. It is right by USC, which is his alma mater. So, and it won't be like the George Lucas Museum. It'll be the George Lucas Museum of those different things. So,
not a museum about him.
George Lucas.
It's a museum by him.
Yeah, the museum of George Lucas. The first half you'd love, and then the second half you'd hate and want your money back for the first half.
So... I've heard a fan theory or a conspiracy theory of sorts of like why the prequels were so much better than, or the prequels were not good and the original, you know,
trilogy.
Yeah.
Right.
The original trilogies, 4, 5, and 6 were much better than 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
And, it had to do with his ex-wife she took his ideas for the originals and she really built stories around
them. She was the editor for the original trilogy.
Right.
Right.
And so she like fixed everything that was a train wreck.
Right.
And then in the prequels, he was
the what?
So prequels. Sorry, just... Prequels. The before the feathers.
Before the peacock.
She
wasn't around.
She wasn't around, and nobody would challenge George Lucas because he was such an icon.
Right.
And so nobody had the gall to
say, wait a minute.
Wait. Jar Jar Binks, come on.
There's a great series of videos, and I remember this was in the previous months going leading up to The Phantom Menace. Every week, I believe, StarWars.com would release a 15-minute making of Phantom Menace thing. So like you got to see the behind the thing. It started with the stars, and it's on the actually it's on the Blu-ray and DVD, I think, is one of the special features, but it came out weekly as a web series, and in one of them, and it's so great to watch now. It's one of the only things that I keep the Phantom Menace DVD around for is to watch it, because I'm intrigued knowing what happened and then watching everyone excitedly making it as they're making it.
Right.
And everybody's sitting in the screening room, and it's clearly a rough cut of it had just screened, and there is just silence and awkwardness, and George is like, well, we can fix it by doing this, and they're like, yeah, but since you're doing weaving these two things together, we can't take the one thing out, like, and so they're clearly like this look of panic, but they still, you're right, just can't say this is garbage,
right?
Like, this is not going to work.
Reset.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, and that is part of the problem, because he's very good at picking, he's kind of like Madonna, how he picks pieces of popular entertainment and forms it into something that is incredibly palatable to everyone else.
No,
but yeah, you need.
Yeah, and not to diminish the genius of what he, but he needed somebody to be able to stand up to him.
Yeah.
You know? And like, you know, there's tons of famous stories about how he and Spielberg would, you know, study Joseph Campbell's, you know, hero's journey.
Hero with 1,000 faces.
Yeah. And like, craft that hero's journey. Yeah. And
well, and he would take dogfighting, he would take footage of dogfighting from World War II, and he would say, edit it exactly like this, but with the spaceships. And that's why it worked.
Yeah.
It worked so well. But yeah, anyway, so coming in 3 years, the $1.5 billion museum for that.
Nice.
The Oregon eclipse is coming. And there are going to be 2 million free eclipse glasses coming to U.S. libraries. So public libraries around the United States will distribute more than 2 million pairs of free eclipse glasses to Skywatchers for the August 21, 2017 event. The Moore Foundation is pleased to help 2 million eyes enjoy and understand this astronomical spectacle with these astronomical spectacles, said Robert Kirshner, who I'm sure did this whole project just to make that pun. He retrofitted this whole thing to fit that pun. If Mark was in charge of the library.
He's been planning for like 10 years. How can I?
He is the chief program officer for science at the Moore Foundation, whatever that is. But in addition to the eclipse viewing glasses, registered organizations will receive an informational booklet about the solar eclipse that includes times and locations for viewing events, which we just actually discovered today. I thought that my house was in the actual total, what is it? Aurora Borealis.
Right. In the path of totality.
The penumbra or the umbra. But it is not, it is, that happens
like
about
2 miles away.
2 miles south.
Yeah.
But we will all be in Idaho.
Right.
So nowhere near my house. So anyway. One last story for Portland here. The McDonald's is offering a new delivery service 24 hours a day. So starting today, just a couple days ago, McDonald's launched their 24-hour Portland metro-wide delivery service through Uber Eats. We can have McDonald's by 15 minutes from now. And it'll expand Portland in November. So download the app, enter your address, and then you can order all you can eat. According to the spokesman, the company has found new novel ways to deliver items fresh. Employees don't begin cooking the food until they are alerted by the app that the driver is 3 minutes from the restaurant. Burgers and fries are transported using special packaging. Oh, I bet you they're whipping out the McDLT packaging again to keep the hot side hot and the cold side cold. Those styrofoam packages were the best and also terrible.
Yes.
And the prevalence of McDonald's locations means that most Portland area residents are only 2 or 3 miles from the restaurant. So they tested this out at the Oregonian, and they featured most of the restaurant's menu items, except for things like soft serve cones, which would be funny, and the dollar menu items, which is a bummer. Can't order the dollar menu items. But after placing an order, the food arrived at the newspaper's office in about 15 minutes. The chicken nuggets and french fries remained crispy and hot. Well, our Dr. Pepper remained cold. So,
his
attention, Nate Heath, that is coming to the fast foodie.
who was watching. How long do you think it's going to be until
we never have to move again?
We never have to move again. Until we have no employees at a McDonald's. I don't think it's going to be that long.
Well, I think we're going to, we still need, I don't think the food cooking part, it'll be a little bit automated, but I don't think that will be, I don't know. I mean, you'd still people to load the machines and refill the this and do, and keeping the machines.
I don't think so.
The machines can't live without us, Mark, right? Right? They need us, right?
No, there's, so.
I don't know.
I don't think it's going to be that long.
Somebody has to man the drive up and make sure that nobody robs the place.
Watson.
RoboCop. The RoboCops that are wandering on the malls Abu Dhabi.
I mean, so they've already got kiosks going in some test markets.
Yes, which increases the order amount. So that you need more workers to make the food. So that evens that out.
The people making food.
We need workers, Mark. No. We need glorious workers' paradise.
So they're... Have you seen the robo drink maker? That's
no.
So we went through.
It's not going to know the fussy amount of ice that I needed my drink.
You program that in the kiosk. You put that in the app and you tell it. So we were in Leavenworth, Washington, which it's our last time to Leavenworth. We
I don't know that I've ever been there, but it seems like it would be like sucking on saccharin. It's just too much.
It was like going to all the ladies that have the wine tasting
Crowd or like going to their house or that, both.
Yes, with that crowd, it was just a sea of white people going to wineries,
right,
and it was that just. Yeah. Cheeseburgers in paradise.
And it's mostly out of towners anyway. So it's like people on vacation-y stuff, right?
Totally. And so it was packed. It took us an hour to find parking. Yeah. And it was stupid. So anyway, as we were trying to exit the town,
Mark,
we're like,
putting
we're
Leavenworth
starving.
On blast.
Yes. You're
taking
on,
them down.
You're on notice.
On notice.
So we went to the McDonald's to get beverages. And there's a robotic machine at the window that she, we're like, can we have two waters? One with no ice. And she's like, beep, 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 link. And she walked away. And then the cup came down.
That was at the drive-thru, right? Yeah, I've seen the cup thing come down.
And then it cycles it through the drink dispensers. And then she
still needed to hand it to you.
Not long.
I did see a new, so there's the future, since I get a lot of my stupid Coke refills. This was one of the thing. Before we get into our main topic, there's a couple things I wanted to say about living at a high elevation, Mark.
Okay.
Because I went last week, I wasn't here. I was in Idaho, and I didn't know we were going to a place called McCall, Idaho, which is about an hour north of Boise, and it's in the mountains. And I didn't know that we were until I was there 2 days, I didn't realize we were up at 5,000 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really high. And I just, my whole family, my family lives in eastern Washington, so they live in the desert, so they're used to constant sun, and then this summer it gets 115 degrees there, so like we're all used to this. And in 20 minutes out on this pontoon boat on a lake, all of us got fried. Like I have not had a sunburn at all like in decades, let alone like this.
You sent me a picture and it was lobster-esque.
I wanted to post it, but my legs are horrifying, so I didn't want them on the internet.
Thank you.
It felt like somebody hit me in the thighs with a baseball bat. Like my muscles hurt. It wasn't my skin. It was my muscles. And that night, it happened so fast. And so like the rest of the day we bundled up or whatever.
It's just a flash burn.
It was really like a flash burn in 10 to 15 minutes. It was unbelievable just because of the elevation that we were at, we weren't used to. And so that night, thankfully my niece had bought a bunch of aloe vera lotion. And so I gooped up with that and then slept with wet, cold towels on my thighs because it was the only way I could sleep. But the next day, like your skin is like 8 times tighter than it needs to be. Now it's all peeling off and it's all horrifying. I forget why I started that story. Oh, elevation.
Elevation.
But I forget what you said, the trigger. What were we just talking about before that, which is why
we were talking about McDonald's. And Chelsea has a good point. Like Leavenworth isn't bad when it's not crowded. It was just commented.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Like, They have Christmas markets and stuff at Leavenworth. I'm backtracking a little bit on my Leavenworth hate, but
you're backing off a little bit.
I'm backing off just a little bit, but yesterday it was terrible.
But my I realized there's a couple other things, because you know you can't bake, you have to bake differently and do some cooking differently at that elevation too, just because the air pressure is so different and like your foods will rise too fast or react differently, which is interesting. And that is just because the air isn't as heavy. Like there's not like a chemical mixture of any kind. It's just that the air is not as heavy.
Right. And things cook slower because the flame isn't as hot, because it's not getting as much oxygen because the air is thinner.
Yeah. And your oven isn't as hot because, and so on the way home, I noticed another thing is that, so I have this big stupid double gulp that I carry around everywhere that I get my refills for $1. And I went to one of the convenience stores there and got my refill. And almost by the time I got back to the house we were staying in, it was completely flat. And it was going, and the first thing, of course, you're asking yourself, Todd, did you check to see if the machine was a quality Lancer machine? And if not, a machine by the Cornelius Corporation? And it was. It was a Lancer. It was a good flow. It had everything in it. The only thing that was different was that, and I think, again, the air, I don't think there's enough pressure to keep the carbonation in its gas form as long as it does down here at sea level. But on the way back, speaking of new Coke machines, there was a whole new, like when you go to the Coke machine, you have the part you put the drink under, and then there's like the panel that has the like Slurpees or whatever, just the big signage. I saw one that whole thing was one huge digital touchscreen. And like it was all flashing or whatever, and like you scrolled through like the selections and then like had to line it up with this thing, but it was like, it was the weirdest, craziest thing. That was my Coke machine story from the middle of.
Could you imagine, you know, our grandparents trying to
there was a drink.
It's like
it's like the first people watching motion pictures who saw the train and thought the train was going to like run them over. But I was at another convenience store and they had like a little, one of the mini fridges for Red Bull, and the whole, so it was maybe like 4 feet high by 2 feet wide maybe. And the whole front panel of that was an LCD screen as well. And when I saw it out of the corner of my eye, it was like showing outdoors or something like that. And it was so unsettling to be, seeing screens that big with like that clarity, just like in this, it is a trip, I say as an old person, but anyway,
you could like, they could make that screen show like really screw with you, because they could make it look like it's the inside of
that
the
is
thing.
The and first then, thing that I thought, I was like, it should look like it's open and you could just reach in and grab it so that everybody smashes their hand
or like it looks like it's there, or like that you're looking through glass and there's a gremlin in there screwing with things, and then like as soon as you look over it goes
that
away.
Would be when awesome
that so have you seen in the Amsterdam airport, there's a clock that it looks like a standard, you know, like Big Ben style of clock, but it's actually a video of a clock face. And in the video is a person that you can see.
He looks like a painter worker guy.
He looks like a painter worker guy who's painting each minute. And then as soon as that minute is painted, he like unpaints
and paints,
erases
the next
it.
And yeah, I
the
just
next
saw
one.
A video of that. My friend Stephen Cook, who is international man of mystery, who someday I want to get on this show, said that they just saw that. He just went to the Amsterdam airport and saw that thing, and it's really cool. But anyway, I'll save us another. I have a perennial complaint that came up because guess who had to get a new.
Yes, Chelsea, you are the demographic. You are a white woman that loves wine. So,
you're on your way to Leavenworth. Anyway, I forgot what I said. Oh, I had to get a new credit card because my last chip. scratched off, and it charged me three times at one location, and I had $25 that I needed in limbo for 10 days because my chip on my credit card broke again. So.
Oh, my gosh.
But I won't talk about that. So instead, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about sugar. So we will be right back. All right. Well, a couple weeks ago or months ago now, I guess we did you did a topic about salt and the history of salt and how it affects the world. So I kind of wanted to do a companion piece to that and talk about how sugar has also helped form the world around us in some pretty significant ways. The first domesticated sugar cane plant, which is where for the longest time we got most of our sugar from sugar cane. Now we get it from sugar cane and sugar beets, all the natural sugars, at least. That's the just the plain sucrose, they call it. So the first people who domesticated the sugar cane was in New Guinea about 10,000 years ago. So about 8,000 BC, they picked and chewed the sugar cane that they learned how to grow. And so that started spreading out into China at about 1,000 BC. In 500, which I think is interesting. So in 1,000 BC, it spreads to China. In 500 AD, India is able to process it into powder. Now, that intrigues me that it would take that long for them to figure out how to boil it and let it dry.
Right.
But unless it's a lot more complicated, that which I'm sure it is, but it seems like just like when you crystallize salt that's been in water. But
right. I wonder what the result, like if I just took
sugar cane and boiled it and
it must be because
another thing is that so that was in 500 AD. And it was a process that you needed to be a master, and then it was handed down. So kind of like glassmakers, how they would just hand that out down from generation to generations because it was such a skill. But at about 1,000 AD, Persia, the Arabs conquer Persia, discover the sugar cane and sugar that they have, and the Muslims spread it around the world because the Muslims are busy going everywhere and conquering everything. And as they're doing that, they're bringing sugar and sugar cane with them and spreading sugar that way. And so there was a quote that sugar followed the Quran because you can see with the spread of Arab Muslims, the spread of sugar happened. So as they're spreading out, well, here come the Crusaders because we can't have Muslims spreading. So of course the Crusaders come. The Crusaders are like, sugar, and so they take it back to Europe and France and England. By that point, the Arabs had turned it into an art form. They've created marzipan, which is like the first real treat. There's some entire mosques that are devoted just to marzipan because it was such a creation. They perfected the refinement. They made sugar into an industry. The Arabs did.
Isn't marzipan basically almond paste with sugar?
I think so. I think it's a little different than almond paste because you can buy almond paste separate to make marzipan, I think. The only thing I know about almond paste is that we used it to make something, a Dutch thing called banquette, which is a really thin pastry dough with the almond paste in, and you roll it up and bake it. Oh, it's so good. And Serena, my ex-wife, used to make it. And almond paste is really, really expensive. And so she would like willingly and lovingly like make it for people. But then be like, but seriously, if you don't like this, I'm not going to eat it. I'm not going to give it to you because it's too expensive just to go to waste. And so we'd like pick and choose. We're like, okay, they'd be good. They really appreciate it. We'd make that for them. But yeah, so the British and French Crusaders, they bring it back to Europe. They start the industry there, but because sugarcane needs a lot of good soil and it depletes the soil really fast, it takes a lot of water and it grows in warm temperatures, they can't really grow it in England all that much. So they're just bringing sugar in and using a secondary industry for that. And as this industry is growing, everyone's realizing that to pick it, to boil it, to manufacture it, to be around all these machines is really labor intensive and really, really awful work. So of course we need slaves to do that. So as sugar spreads around the world, slavery spreads around the world because it's just such awful, and war prisoners. That's what they did in the Crusades. They would put the war prisoners into sugar making factories. Around the 1400s is when the age of exploration, they call it, you know, all of the people from Europe are spreading around. They're exploring the world by boats, but they're also a huge part of what they want to do is find more land to grow more sugarcane. And so they're finding areas that are good at that, which is why they end up in the Caribbean, all around that area. So they settle on that area because of the climate. They're also at this time starting to grow sugar beet, which you can grow in more temperate climates. When you process it, it turns into the exact same composition. So right now we still do use a mix of sugar cane and sugar beets, depending on where it's grown.
Was there any sweetener before that?
There's like, honey. And so like
honey.
Lots of people.
Okay.
And I read this quote that can't possibly be real, but it was like found in someone's diary in the 1300s, you know, visited India. And it was some like flowery. They gave me the sand, the honey sand with no honey, or like something just like ridiculous that I was
the
like,
honey
that
sand
can't.
Made not by bees.
Totally. Yeah. It was like made not by. Yeah. So I was like, that can't be true. So I didn't write that down. So Columbus, even one of it, he brought sugarcane with him to plant in the different places that he was landing. And so the Caribbean, or depending on who you are, the
Caribbean.
Is it the only place that say Caribbean is when you say Pirates of the Caribbean?
I say Pirates of the Caribbean.
Do you?
Yep.
Do you? I've heard lots of people always call that Caribbean, and I've always
do
it too.
I do it Caribbean.
But it's like the weird thing that like you never call it that unless you're saying Pirates of first.
Yo ho, yo ho.
Okay. So the Caribbean becomes the source for what now is big sugar, which is just as important as spices in going around the world. And up until now, because there aren't a lot of places to grow it, sugar was considered like one of the super fancy spices. It was priced that much. Only the rich people can get it. But as Europe is expanding into the Caribbean, into the New World, the demand for sugar skyrockets, and the output explodes because they have all these great new slaves. So Portugal alone sent 100,000 slaves into like Trinidad and Barbados and Puerto Rico and all of those Caribbean places. And since sugar cane depletes things so quickly, they would just show up on one of these new islands. They would mow down the forest that was there. They would plant sugar cane until the ground could produce nothing anymore. And they would just move on to the next island. The islanders who were there would either die because they were old, and then they would be replaced by slaves, or they would, you know, follow wherever the industry went. So we're just leaving this line of depleted islands in the wake, and mills that aren't there anymore, and processing plants that aren't there anymore.
And what years are these?
This is the 1400s, 1500s. But still, I mean, slavery was outlawed in the early 1800s in Europe. The late 1800s in America, but half the 11 million slaves that came into the New World were used for sugar.
Wow.
So we always think of cotton and agriculture in the South
and
stuff like
tobacco
that. And tobacco. Half of it was for sugar industry.
Makes sense.
So world production up until the 1900 is 13 million tons of sugar. And I have there's some stats. The average Englishman, their intake of sugar in the year 1700, every year they would have 4 pounds of sugar. So that's added sugar to breads, you know, anything, pounds of sugar, 1700. So the year 1800, we're up to 18 pounds of sugar. 1870, 47 pounds of sugar.
Per person?
Per person a year. 1900,
100
pounds of added sugar a year. 2017, where do you think we are? So 1900, we were at 100 pounds per person. It went 418, 47, to 100 in 1900.
I fear this number.
Right.
Because I mean, it's everything that's
wrong with everything.
Wrong. 250. 250.
77.
Oh,
so we have gone down.
Oh,
yeah.
77 pounds per person per year
of added sugar.
Okay.
Of added sugar.
Okay.
So we have gone down a little bit. However, it is still the main cause of things like obesity and hypertension and things like that.
Is it because we've replaced it with high fructose corn syrup?
That is part of the problem, is that a lot of our added sweeteners are things like that. But added sweeteners are also calorie low usually, except if it's, well, like
HFCS.
Is that what we're calling it now?
It's addictive.
Not that one, like, but I'm thinking of things like sucralose and NutraSweet and stevia and all that
kernel
stuff.
He puts an addictive.
The kernel. So we are down, but it is still one of the largest causes of health problems. And in the 1970s, when we were trying to figure out why Americans were getting so fat, we blamed it all on like actual fat in our foods. And so in American food consumption, our diet is actually lower in total fat and stuff like that than it was in the 1970s. But we totally ignored all the sugar. Are we back in the pug? Oh, he is still alive. I was going to say,
she's good.
You can see her breathing. We focus a lot on the actual fat instead of what the sugar does. And sugar, when our body processes, so one of the main reasons that humans crave sugar is because as we were evolving, and you can see this in a lot of different species of primates too, have this special ability to really process the fructose in sugar really, really well. We're really able to turn that into energy, and we don't need a lot of it. You think of all the mammals and trees that were eating fruit, which was giving them all of that natural fructose, and able to turn that into a lot of energy. So our bodies crave it because we know it is a quick source of quick burst energy. Even though one of the things, this is kind of a side, as the Not Nerd show would call it, a sidestep, there is no scientific consensus that sugar causes hyperactivity.
I recently read that, and
everyone will go to the ground saying, well, of course it does. I've worked with children enough to know that,
right.
I know when kids are dropped off in my Sunday school room that they had like a cupcake on the way to church and then they crash. But there is still there's nothing that correlates that scientifically yet, I'll say.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure we'll be able to figure out what that exact link is at some point, but right now... But it sounds like we are genetically programmed to do just that, get quick bursts of energy from
right.
a small amount of something. Huh. So that's just kind of a sidebar.
Huh.
But because we developed that, we developed that taste. And because there's not a lot of that naturally occurring in nature, I mean, there's fruits, but you only get that a certain part of the year. But now... we've added it to everything because it stimulates the same part of our brain, the same pleasure center as our brain as heroin and cocaine and all of those other things that make us feel really,
are those endorphins,
really good. Yeah, or, that's part okay. of it. So, and it's the same, yeah, area of the brain that is activated for that. So between adding that much added sugar to our diet, even though we're a little bit down, I mean, obviously 77 pounds is a lot more than however much fruit we were eating before that per pound per year to get that amount of sugar, is that after, if you don't burn that energy, obviously it turns into a triglyceride, which turns into a fat. So when our body doesn't process that, there's stuff that you can get fatty liver and your kidneys can be overtaxed. And if you have too much sugar, then your insulin is all out of all of
right.
that stuff that our body does to try to even out those sugar spikes, because there is not just an increase in neural activity, but there is something specific about sugar that makes that neural activity spike, just like it does with other drugs. But between that and a lifestyle of not, because in the 1900s, you're still on a farm plowing a field
right.
all day long. So eat right. a bag of sugar and your body totally. Is still going to be fine because we're still doing all of that activity. But now that we're much more sedentary, obviously we don't work that off like we used to.
Right. A couple notes here.
None of what you said is true.
No, I love this. You know, I have a sweet tooth, and
you're looking that vest that I was making fun of earlier today. It's very flattering. It looks very nice on you.
Thank you.
Nice today.
We like this. So I Weight Watchers and uh-huh. I'm down a few pounds now. I love sugary things. And I think we should have a topic around
eating cotton candy
for 20 minutes. Candy for 20 minutes.
Oh, I had a taste of a cotton candy. I have a cotton candy Slurpee that I got Colin as a treat this past week.
Cotton candy flavored.
Yeah. Blue Slurpee. Cotton candy flavored yeah, Slurpee, which
I'm,
is really good.
I'm all about that. We should do an episode around taste buds and, the difference, the spectrum of taste buds, because there are people that things taste naturally sweeter, and so they tend to eat more vegetables because they're sweeter.
Everything is,
and they're not as bitter.
Right. And interesting.
And for me, it takes a lot of sweetness in order to taste that and get that, and so. Vegetables
Your gauge
are generally
is off or whatever.
Right. It generally pretty bitter to me,
sure.
and so I really love the
well.
The
and
sweet.
Yeah, we should do that because there is that whole thing of like there are four zones of our tongues to taste, which is
right.
all bullcrap.
Right.
So maybe we should do that.
Yeah. And another thing, when we lived in Italy, the consumption of things that we perceive as being decadent, we hold a lot of shame as Americans. Like they would have this what looked like a hot dog bun, but it was a sweet roll that they would fill with whipped cream.
Right. Those are good.
they're
cannolis,
awesome.
Cannolis, is that what that's called? Cannoli?
Cannoli, that's a shell that they fill with like a cream cheese based like a ricotta based, not cream cheese, ricotta based sweet cheese, which is also awesome, right? But they would have things that were just, campana just meant like, and add a ton of whipped cream to it. And so they'd have like a shot of espresso with a pile of whipped cream on it. And you're like, in the United States, we'd feel shame or like guilt or look down or like, oh, well, you know, I'm only doing this one.
Yeah,
and you'd have this like response to it. And there they just fully own it and they lavish in it. And then it's done and it's behind
them. Is that a daily occurrence for them or is it a birthday cake thing?
It is.
Or maybe not that.
Not that infrequent, but not. They would have like a blast of sugar and have none of the shame that we have about it.
Right.
For like
none of the excuses. I'm none like, well, of these, just this.
No. And there was no looking down on somebody else for like, oh, you got that big old fat donut.
Right.
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they had no
interesting
issue with that at all, but very active lifestyle, very, and virtually no high fructose corn syrup in the country.
Right. It's, and that was, yeah. And that was the huge game changer. And that, was a whole topic on itself that I thought about doing. Cause
we
I found the two inventors of it. And I thought like, what a weird legacy, you know, like you discover this thing that is both great, but also ends up being terrible. And also, like, what a conflicting thing to discover and have your name attached to. And, like, I don't know. So one of these days.
Yeah, it was like the guy that invented leaded gasoline that we did that episode
Oh,
on.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
He's just like, and he, hydrofluorocarbons.
Yeah.
He did both. And, like, he's the inventor that that has caused more damage to the earth than any other human.
Oh my gosh. I don't remember poor his guy. Name.
There's an episode about it.
He's like the opposite of that guy who's like, what is it? I've saved like 6 billion people because of the seeds he's developed and stuff like that.
No.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he's not that guy. Funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the kind of the long and short of sugar, which I found interesting, especially that it was such a huge factor in discovering the New World and populating the New World with all of these slaves and all and the amount of them that it took to bring sugar to be both cheap and readily available. So that is the end of the sugar story.
I love sugar.
So we didn't have a Unipiper segment. He's out of town this week. Is there anything going on around in Portland that? Oh, next week. So this Sunday, the 8th. I better look on that. The 9th, maybe. Oh, my phone's over here. At Landmark Saloon, which I believe the address, if I can remember from the top of my head, is 4847 Southeast Division here in Portland. I can't even work.
We should add Nate Heath call in or something like that.
To tell us about. I think there's more mustache competitions coming, and he was at the one at Dante's.
Yeah, how did that go? I heard
it was packed. I heard there was like hundreds of people there. Greg and Sarah did a great job. They said it was tiring though because they had to interview every single one of the contestants.
It was like 120.
Yeah, just on and on. But they said it was a great time. So yeah, Sunday July 9th. At the Landmark Saloon on 4847 Southeast Division. I'm going to be selling my notebooks. So
they're
having another open air market. You can come. And actually, when I was there last time, someone came up and they were like, "You're Todd the Corpse." And I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard that in a long time. But they also knew Portland at the movies because we were on the Fun Employment Radio Network and wearing my Fun Employment shirt.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so, we visited last time and saw Sarah Dillon there and it was a good crew of people, really diverse,
super laid back. You can bring your kids, you can bring your pets, so come check that out this Sunday. And there's also a Lego thing coming up exhibition? Sometime.
The Lego exhibition is going on at OMSI.
No, it's a different one. Oh. It's like a big thing that's coming through.
It might actually be done at OMSI. I think they're getting ready for the...
No, it's a different thing than OMSI.
I don't know anything.
Stop saying OMSI. It is not.
It's not OMSI.
Different thing. So, Google that, I guess, if you want to check that out. So, that's all I have, cool. I think. Anything else?
Nope.
What should we play on the way out?
On the way out, we will...
We can do a little Def Leppard, pour some sugar on me.
Pour some sugar on me while we watch Isabel Pug stay asleep.
Oh, that would be cute. Let's do that. But if you want to find out more about us, you can go to markandtalkcast.com where you can find the last 89 episodes now of this silly show that we've been doing.
We gotta prepare that 100.
Yes, I know. I meant to do that on vacation, but I was busy writing the church play that I was getting burnt to a crisp and not being able to move for 3 days. And I'm peeling the... Did I send you that picture?
Yes,
I was sitting
in
the car.
Not a picture, a video.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
A video of you peeling skin off.
Like just sheets of skin off of my leg.
So I watched it, and then of course Nick was CC'd on the same message, and so I had to watch it again when Nick brought it out. So I was like, oh my god, do you see this?
It was really awful. It was just collected this big pile of skin on my floor mat for a whole day, and it made me laugh every time I got in the car because it was so awful. I don't know, whatever that story was about. But anyway, here's Def Leppard. Oh, visit markandtalkcast.com for all our past episodes. And drop us a line if you want to hear something for us to talk about. Let us know. And I just ran out of steam, so here's Def Leppard.
Here we go.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
And here's the pug.
Oh, man. It's like eighth grade all over again. With their one-armed drummer.
Oh, yeah. That's at a 4-H conference. Sing it, like, dance into this.
Like, at a 4-H conference.
Totally.
How does one dance to this? Do you want to give us... You're on camera right now. You can give us a little...
the pug's on the camera right now. That's right. I think it's going to be me.
All right. Well, we will talk to you guys next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
you take sugar? One more bottle.